Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we continue our coverage on ambulance issues in East County with a special report on our San Diego County's response times in rural areas compared to other places. And later in the show, we'll have a report on how mapping problems are delaying ambulances from reaching some rural residents. We'll also tell you about a new bill to end solitary confinement of minors in California. Then on Green Scene, hear about an alarming measure passed by congressional Republicans that would authorize the selling off of millions of acres of our public lands, including national forests, wilderness, wildlife preserves, and more, right here in San Diego County. A court has issued a tentative ruling in favor of the Grossmont Union High School District in a lawsuit involving funds for a new high school in Alpine. Plus, the district has a special meeting this week about issuing more bonds to fund future construction of other projects. Elections are still a year away in San Diego, but some races are already heating up. Hear about a three-way race for county supervisor and about a city council candidate who has announced he is running for the state assembly. On our health report, learn about West Nile virus found in Spring Valley and how you can protect yourself from this mosquito-borne disease. We'll also have news about dog flu, including a virulent new strain that surfaced, and what dog owners should know to protect their pets. From the Middle East comes some horrifying news about a mass grave found in Tikrit after that city was liberated from ISIS forces. On the second half of our show today, we'll bring you the lighter side of the news, starting with some exciting trades made by the Padres to create what some fans hope could be a pennant-contending team. We'll also have the latest on the Chargers stadium, including $500,000 in consulting fees that the county and city just agreed to pay. Now, we don't usually cover beach stories here at East County Magazine, which, after all, is all about the inland regions, but this week, there were just too many bizarre beach stories to resist, so stay tuned to hear about some wild but true tales from San Diego's coastal region. In honor of Women's History Month, our Sounds of History segment will honor Helen Stoddard, an amazing woman from East County's past who helped win women the right to vote in California, organize support for La Mesa to become a city, and ultimately become one of the first women in America to run for national office. If you've traveled through Ramona recently, you may have noticed some colorful murals popping up around town. We'll have information about who's behind these public works of art, honoring the region's rich historical heritage. We'll also have news today about a photo contest in Lemon Grove, a mountain lion call caught on a trail cam that may surprise you, and a warning about home improvement scams to watch out for. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is Miriam Raftery with a special report on ambulance response times in San Diego County. The county's contract with its ambulance provider, Mercy, requires that response times be less than 30 minutes, 90% of the time, in rural areas, and 10 minutes in urban areas. That's the same requirement it had with the former ambulance provider as well. But 30 minutes is way too long if you've had a heart attack or other major trauma, medical experts agree. Now, the county has advised us that in 2014, the County Fire Authority had a better response time than that requirement, averaging just over 10 minutes, while the former ambulance provider, AMR, averaged about 14 minutes. But why does the county's contract even list 30 minutes as an acceptable standard for the vast majority of emergency calls in rural areas? A special investigation by East County Magazine could find no other jurisdiction with such a long allowable response time. There may be one, but if so, we couldn't find it. We checked through online searches of other agencies in California, the U.S., and foreign countries to the degree that such data was available, and many agencies do not disclose their response times. Now, there's no official federal or state standard for response times in the United States or California, according to the Emergency Medical Services trade publication EMS World, although some counties, cities, and foreign countries do set their own standards, and many of them have much better records than San Diego County. The data is spotty and not always up to date. Nonetheless, these findings shine light on the potential to do a lot better. The entire state of Mississippi achieved an average ambulance response time of just 6 minutes from dispatch to location in 1997, the state's Department of Health reported. If a poor southern state with many rural areas could manage this, why can't San Diego County? Wales, a predominantly rural nation belonging to Great Britain, is over 8,000 square miles. That's bigger than San Diego County and has a population of over 3 million people. Over half of the emergency ambulance responses in Wales to immediately life-threatening situations arrived within 8 minutes in February of 2015, with a median response time of 7 minutes and 49 seconds, although less serious calls did take longer, according to Welsh government statistics. In Australia's New South Wales region in 2013 and 2014, the government reported that the highest priority calls for life-threatening cases were responded to in less than 8 minutes over half the time. Israel, interestingly, uses ambucycles to swiftly reach those in medical need aboard motorcycles as a supplement to conventional ambulance services. The average response time nationally for ambucycles is just 3 minutes, San Diego Jewish World has reported. Riverside County, just northeast of San Diego, manages average response times ranging from just over 3 minutes to just under 10 minutes, depending on which fire department is involved. The highest was for Idlewild, a mountain community, and the lowest was for Pechanga, an Indian reservation. Riverside County's fire department has an 8.3-minute response time on average, while the city of Riverside averages just over 5 minutes, according to a February 2014 report prepared by Riverside County on its emergency medical services. The city of San Diego was recently taken to task by the county's grand jury for slow response times during 2013 and 2014 in six areas: Home Avenue, Paradise Hills, the College Area, Skyline, Encanto, and the Governor Area. The grand jury report stated it is a known fact that there is a need for major rebuilding and building of new firehouses to accommodate those emergency medical services. The city was striving for a 12-minute response time or less at the time, which is far better than the 30-minute response time that the county contract deems acceptable in the rural areas. Now, admittedly, some rural residents are in locations so remote that very short response times would be unattainable. But for the vast majority living in or near towns or highways, shouldn't the county expect better? Areas like Potrero or Dearhorn Valley too often have to wait long periods, sometimes an hour or so, for medical aid to arrive because there are no paramedic units stationed in their towns. The anguish is felt by residents like Hillary Dixon. In a letter to Supervisor Diane Jacob, Dixon recalls that back in 2010, "Where was the county," she says, "when I placed a 911 call for my 13-year-old son in a diabetic coma?" Dixon says the first units to respond had no paramedics, and she had to wait a full 2 hours for them to arrive. She recalls, "It was terrifying to watch your son with blue lips shaking, unresponsive in a diabetic coma, with the fire department unable to assist since not all the stations in Hamul and elsewhere have paramedics, for 2 hours. Hamul's fire department now does have its own 24/7 paramedic unit, so the situation has improved quite a bit in that regard. The county says that counting multiple agencies, there will soon be 13 ambulances to serve East County's unincorporated areas along the I-8 and Highway 94 corridors. But the question remains, why does our county's contract with its ambulance providers, new and old, require only a 30-minute response time 90% of the time? Brain death occurs within minutes after a heart attack without emergency medical intervention, and in a highway collision where victims are bleeding severely or have other major injuries, every minute counts, and relying on air ambulances is not the answer either, since they can't fly when there are high winds or severe weather conditions. Perhaps instead, the county should set standards that assure all taxpayers in the county could have a reasonable expectation of receiving ambulance service within a short time frame when their life depends on it. Or, perhaps, the county grand jury should take a look at the county's ambulance response times and make recommendations to further improve emergency medical services in our rural areas.
A measure set for hearing this week in the California Senate Public Safety Committee aims to end solitary confinement of children in our state. Angela Chung with the Children's Defense Fund supports the bill. She states, "Every day in detention facilities all across the state, children as young as 13 are held in solitary confinement for days, weeks, and sometimes months at a time. Far from promoting safety or aiding in rehabilitation, this draconian disciplinary practice exposes already vulnerable young people to severe psychological and developmental trauma from which they may never fully recover." Senate Bill 124 by State Senator Jay Leno would place strict limitations on the use of solitary confinement in juvenile justice facilities and encourage more positive and developmentally appropriate methods for working with youths to help them learn from past missteps and develop the education and social skills needed to succeed once they return to their communities. If passed, the measure would allow detention facilities to use solitary confinement only if an individual poses an immediate and substantial risk of harm to the security of the facility or poses an immediate and substantial risk of harm to others that is not the result of a mental disorder. In addition, the bill limits time in solitary confinement to only the minimum time required to address the risk and for a period of time that does not compromise the mental and physical health of the minor. The measure proposes a 4-hour time limit. A minor who is a danger to him or herself or others due to a mental disorder cannot be placed in solitary confinement according to the bill, which requires that instead the child be transferred to a mental health facility for evaluation. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community. This is Miriam Raftery with a disturbing story out of Washington, D.C. for all who care about our public lands. The Republican-controlled House and Senate have passed measures that would allow the sale or outright giveaway of most public lands, including national forests, federal wildernesses, wildlife preserves, and Bureau of Land Management properties. Only Republicans voted for the language slipped into a non-binding budget resolution, which passed without a single Democratic vote. The shocking news is revealed in New York Times editorial by Will Rogers, president of the Trust for Public Lands, titled "Our Land Up for Grabs." While it's unlikely that President Barack Obama would actually support such an extreme measure, if a Republican president is elected in 2016 and the Republican Party maintains control of both houses of Congress, then losing our cherished public lands could become a very real possibility. Here in San Diego County alone, that could mean the demise of Cleveland National Forest, Otay Mountain Wilderness, Hauser Wilderness, Pine Creek, Carrizo Gorge, Sawtooth Mountain Wilderness, Agua Tibia Wilderness, San Diego National Wildlife Refuge, San Diego Bay National Wildlife Refuge, the Tijuana Slough National Wildlife Refuge, McCain Valley National Recreation Area, and more. Now, the two measures vary in just how far they would go. The Senate measure, which passed by a mere 2-vote margin, would allow the federal government to sell or give away all federal lands to states or local governments that could auction them off, except for national parks and monuments. This could include bands of wilderness or forest lands surrounding the national parks, even, such as in Sequoia, Grand Canyon, and Yellowstone areas. The House measure, which passed 228-119, would similarly turn over public lands to state and local governments to give them more control over the resources within their boundaries and to lead to, quote, increased resource production, also allowing states and localities to take advantage of the, quote, benefits of increased economic activity. That could mean opening up these protected lands to oil drilling, fracking, mining, or development for commercial, industrial, or residential projects, or tourism. It would be up to each state or local government to decide the future of these federal lands. And let's not forget that in the recent budget crisis, California's governor was set to allow the closure and sale of 70 state parks. Thankfully, all but two were spared when the budget improved and citizens groups stepped forward to cover some operational costs. State and local parks could fall prey to the Congressional Budget Acts, too, since next up, the Land and Water Conservation Fund reauthorization vote is looming. That provides money to partially underwrite state and local parks and recreation conservation easements, and also money for the national parks, forests, and wildlife refuge, and it expires on September 30th unless the Republican-backed Congress decides to reauthorize it. Ironically, it was a Republican president, Theodore Roosevelt, who started the federal system for preserving lands for posterity for the public enjoyment after his visits to Yosemite and Yellowstone inspired him to launch the national parks and national forest systems as a national system for conserving our natural resources. This should be a conservative value. Over 400 million people a year visit our federal public lands, pumping $41 billion into the U.S. economy, according to the Department of the Interior. But the real benefit is in giving Americans pride in our national heritage, our beautiful public lands, and an appreciation for the wonders of nature. Indeed, many species of wildlife could well go extinct if the federal government stopped protecting millions of acres of public lands. Rogers concludes, "Rather than selling off the lands we all own, our leaders should listen to voters and find ways to protect more of the places that make America special."
This is Ed Barena with an education report. The Grossmont Union High School District Governing Board will hold a special meeting on Thursday, April 8th at 5 p.m. in the Grossmont High School Library. The agenda has just one action item, a proposed resolution authorizing issuance of up to $73.5 million of capital appreciation bonds under Proposition U to fund projects at Valhalla, Grossmont, and Monte Vista High Schools. Here are the three projects that will proceed under these bond funds. At Valhalla High School, modernization of the main building, including the theater and installation of interim housing. At Grossmont High School, construction of the new Student Support Services and Arts Building. And at Monte Vista High School, reconfiguring an industrial arts building, modernizing the metal and auto shop building, upgrading lighting in the gymnasium, and improving the parking lots. According to the agenda, the district must issue the next round of bonds under Proposition U in order to fund the three projects that have been approved to proceed and to satisfy the San Diego Superior Court's preliminary injunction to set aside a total of $42 million by January 2016 for the Alpine High School project.
Superior Court Judge Joel Pressman has issued a tentative ruling in the Alpine Union School District's lawsuit against the Grossmont Union High School District over funding for an Alpine High School. The judge granted Grossmont's motion to strike down four causes of action filed by the Alpine District related to Grossmont's failure to build an Alpine High School. Alpine had alleged that Grossmont illegally used Prop H and Prop U bond monies for projects other than the high school, wasting taxpayer funds. The Alpine District had previously obtained a preliminary injunction requiring Grossmont to set aside funds for the high school. The Alpine plaintiffs alleged four causes of action: permanent injunction, taxpayer and school bond waste prevention, declaratory relief, and a writ of mandate. Judge Pressman granted Grossmont's request and struck down all four causes of action, but he did allow plaintiffs to file an amended complaint within 30 days. Grossmont argued that Alpine lacked standing to bring any cause of action due to the statute of limitations, effectively stating that even if money was misspent or wasted, as plaintiffs allege, it's too late to file a challenge. Judge Pressman struck down the first two causes of action due to the statute of limitations. And as for the declaratory relief and writ of mandate, the judge wrote, it is not clear that plaintiff Alpine Union School District would have standing. Next up, the court will hear the effect of the ruling on that preliminary injunction that's currently in place. Sal Casamassimo with the Alpine Taxpayer Association, which is also a party in the case, says Alpine plaintiffs will file an amended complaint, omitting the waste action claim. He adds, no appeal is planned, as we believe there is a good chance the court will accept our amended complaint. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
In response to our series on changes in county ambulance services for rural areas, Dearhorn Valley Antler editor Kim Hamilton has contacted us, as well as Supervisor Jacob's office. Hamilton says she's grateful for improvements in ambulance services that the county is working to provide, but she wants to see more done to provide emergency responders with accurate maps and a protocol that requires familiarity with backcountry roads in their jurisdiction. You see, Google Maps and GPS often don't work in rural areas. Maps that hang on the wall of the fire station are very sketchy and in places downright inaccurate, Hamilton adds. Dearhorn Valley has homes spread out over a large area with only two paved roads, and from that intersection it is another 15 miles or 20 minutes to reach the nearest fire station in Hamul. Many people live off of dirt roads, and some are deeply rutted. If the driver is unfamiliar with the area, it's even worse, since some private driveways are not even marked. Involving community residents to examine response maps of their area is one way to increase safety, Hamilton says. We've brought this to the attention of the fire district in the past and even volunteered to review the mapping, she points out. I even spoke with the chief of a Los Angeles area fire district who personally goes down roads, knocks on doors, and adds important information to his official maps, such as water sources and houses hidden from the road. So why isn't this being done here, we wonder. According to Hamilton, during the 2007 Harris fire, out-of-town firefighting units did not know that the large water tanks were filled with water and hookup nozzles that fits a standard fire hose. So when they ran out of water, they made the long trip back into Hamul to fill their tanks when there were many thousands of gallons available within distance of good roads, since most residents have 10,000-gallon tanks, which they are required to keep full for fire protection. Hamilton told us she has listened live to scanner feeds where confused responders were trying their best to locate an address. In one case, a home continued to burn for 10 to 15 minutes while responding engines tried to find its access road. She says, I also watched medical responders try desperately to determine the difference between a driveway and the road. 10 to 15 minutes were lost as they first went down one and then the other. It can be impossible to find an address if you don't know where you're going already. Everything looks the same in the dark. Roads aren't lit, and most have no signage. Now, some community groups are trying to help. The Deerhorn Valley Antler, the DV Community Association, Outer Hummel Fire Safe Council, and DV Auxiliary encourage residents to make sure their roads and driveways are well marked. The Auxiliary and the Fire Safe Council have custom address signs available at cost. But with so many different property owners, there's not enough consistency. Hamilton suggests that perhaps a coordinated effort between responders, residents, and county road services could address this part of the problem with little additional cost. She concludes that despite some improvements in ambulance services, more equipment and personnel are not the only way to improve safety and decrease response times in the backcountry. Deerhorn Valley is ready to work with agencies to improve the accuracy of existing maps and add resource information locations, Hamilton says, adding, "We know the roads and the confusion spots better than anyone." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Democrat Rudy Reyes, a Cedar Fire burn survivor who has run for supervisor in the past, has advised East County Magazine that he is entering the race. State Senator Joel Anderson, a Republican, has also announced plans to challenge incumbent supervisor Diane Jacob, a Republican who has held the seat for more than two decades. A three-way race could make it difficult for any candidate to win outright with over 50% of the vote. That makes a runoff race between the two top vote-getters likely. There is also still time for additional candidates to file to run. If Diane Jacob is re-elected in 2016, this would be her final term of office due to term limits approved by voters. She has received endorsements from Sheriff Bill Gore and District Attorney Bonnie Dumanis. Joel Anderson has long positioned himself as a tax fighter championing taxpayers, though Jacob backers also praise her record as a fiscal conservative. Anderson previously served on the Padre Dam Municipal Water District Board before his election to the legislature. He received party endorsement of the San Diego County Republican Party. The County Republican Party is reportedly unhappy over supervisor's recent vote to limit campaign contributions by political parties to $25,000 in supervisor races and $50,000 for countywide races such as district attorney. Rudy Reyes survived devastating burns during the Cedar Fire and has volunteered at the San Diego Burn Institute helping others. Named a hero of the Cedar Fire by the Smithsonian Institute, he is also an archaeologist who helped establish the Barona Museum and Cultural Center. His key issues in prior campaigns focused on improving fire safety and improving county access for medical marijuana patients. He was defeated by wide margins in all three prior matchups against Jacob, most recently in 2012 when Jacob won by a 78-22% margin. Diane Jacob has been named best legislator by the East County Californians for each of the past 5 years. She has led efforts to create a county fire department, improve oversight of senior care facilities, launch an Alzheimer's research project, pass ordinances to enable growth of family-run agricultural and wine businesses, promote solar energy, support creation of new trails and parks, and maintain a balanced budget for county taxpayers. Joel Anderson has authored only a handful of measures while in Sacramento. Measures of his signed into law include legislation to assist homeschooled children in getting work permits, give disabled veterans free access to state parks, and require the public employees retirement system to divest from investment in Iran. Diane Jacob has fought against big energy projects and industrial zoning in the backcountry and San Diego's inland regions, from Sunrise Power Link to the county's wind energy ordinance. Joel Anderson refused to take stances on major energy projects such as Quail Brush, Tule Wind, and the Sunrise Power Link, despite numerous requests from constituents to do so. He recently sent a letter to supervisors in support of Soytec's proposed solar projects in Boulevard, despite strong community opposition in Boulevard and a San Diego State hydrologist report indicating the projects could irreversibly damage the ecosystem by draining groundwater for construction beyond what can be replenished through rainfall. Backers of Diane Jacob suggested in a mailing to supporters that Anderson is in the race because his, quote, only interests are advancing a political career and delivering for special interest supporters, unquote. Anderson is the California representative for the American Legislative Exchange Council, which creates model legislation to advance corporate interests. Anderson has been an effective money raiser for the Republican Party, but has drawn controversy over his own political contributions. Anderson has received substantial campaign funding from Sempra Energy, SDG&E, as well as Hamon Construction family members. In late 2009, Anderson was fined $20,000 by the Fair Political Practices Commission under a plea bargain arrangement for illegally funneling money from Sempra SDG&E, Hamon Construction family members, and others into his campaign through a Republican Central Committee in another county. The donations exceeded state limits for donors. Anderson returned contributions from Hamon, Sempra, and others. Hamon owns part of the land slated for the controversial Tule Wind Project and 765 acres of Soytec's Rugged Solar Project, which Anderson supports. Anderson also leases his office space in a building owned by Hamon Companies. The second supervisorial district is the largest countywide, including the cities of El Cajon, La Mesa, Lemon Grove, Poway, and Santee, as well as unincorporated areas of San Diego County. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Ed Barrena.
City Councilman Todd Gloria announced Tuesday that he will run for the 78th Assembly District next year at the end of his council term, Times of San Diego reports. Assembly Speaker Tony Atkins, who currently holds the seat, will be leaving office due to term limits. Gloria said in an email to supporters, "I was truly humbled to serve as interim mayor of San Diego and to begin the process of restoring your trust in our city government. Together we have stabilized the city's budget, advocated for housing, protected our environment, and stood up for working families. I want to continue that progress as San Diego's voice in our state capital." Gloria describes himself as the proud son of a maid and a gardener who worked hard to give their son opportunity. He's been mentioned as a possible candidate for mayor in 2016, but in setting his sights on the state assembly, he will face interim city councilman and lifeguard Ed Harris, who announced his candidacy last November. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Ed Barrena with a health report. A dead hawk found in Spring Valley has tested positive for West Nile virus, making it the first appearance of the potentially deadly disease in San Diego County this year. West Nile virus first arrived here in 2003. Last year, 11 San Diego County residents were diagnosed with the disease and 2 local residents died. Statewide, nearly 800 people were diagnosed with West Nile virus in 2014, and 29 people died, the highest number of deaths from the disease in California in a decade. Across the country, over 2,000 people were diagnosed with West Nile virus in 2014, and 85 people died. West Nile virus is a disease that mainly affects birds, but can be transmitted to people, horses, and other animals by mosquitoes that first feed on infected birds. Not all mosquitoes carry West Nile virus, and roughly 80% of people exposed never develop any symptoms. Nearly all the other 20% only develop flu-like symptoms. But in rare cases, some people can become seriously ill and possibly even die. Elizabeth Pozzebon, director of the County Department of Environmental Health, advises everyone should remember to eliminate standing water inside and outside homes where mosquitoes could breed. Wear clothing that covers arms and legs or use repellent if you're outside dusk to dawn, and report dead birds and mosquito breeding areas. County officials offer a 3-step process to remember to prevent, protect, and report. Prevent mosquito breeding. Dump out or remove any item inside or outside of homes that can hold water, such as plant saucers, rain gutters, buckets, garbage cans, toys, old tires, and wheelbarrows. Mosquito fish, available for free, may be used to control mosquito breeding in backyard water sources, such as unused swimming pools, ponds, fountains, and horse troughs. Protect yourself from mosquito bites. Protect yourself from West Nile virus by staying inside when mosquitoes are most active, from dusk till dawn. Wear long sleeves and pants, or use repellent when outdoors. Use insect repellent that contains DEET, picaridin, oil of lemon, eucalyptus, or IR3535. Make sure screens on windows and doors are in good condition and secured to keep insects out. And finally, report. Report dead crows, ravens, jays, hawks, and owls in green swimming pools to the Vector Control Program at 858-694-2888, or email vector@sdcounty.ca.gov. County officials also said the public can keep up with West Nile virus activity and anonymously report dead birds and green swimming pools by downloading the county's Fight the Bite mobile app.
This is Miriam Raftery with some disturbing news from the Middle East. CNN reports that a mass grave containing up to 1,700 bodies has been found in the Iraqi city of Tikrit. The bodies are believed to be Iraqi soldiers slaughtered by Islamic State or ISIS forces last summer, according to Iraqi officials. The grisly find may be just the beginning of evidence being unturned, revealing massacres by ISIS terrorists after the Iraqi government's forces regained control of Tikrit from ISIS at the end of March. Reuters reports that there may be as many as a dozen mass graves in Tikrit alone, former hometown of Saddam Hussein, and they are all tied to ISIS. Some reports indicate the soldiers were murdered with machine guns, then dumped into the graves. Khalid Al-Atbi, an Iraqi government health official, told Reuters that discovery of the first mass grave was heartbreaking, calling the ISIS extremists savage barbarians. He adds, "We couldn't prevent ourselves from breaking down in tears."
This is Ed Barrena with the health report. Dog flu first appeared in Florida in 2004, but now a new and highly contagious strain has been identified in the Chicago area. It's called canine flu H3N8. Over 1,000 cases have been identified, and 5 have proven fatal, CBS News reports. While most cases are mild, the illness can also cause secondary complications, such as pneumonia. It has spread to 30 states, including California. The Chicago Tribune reports that some vet clinics have shut down and others are requiring separate entrances for dogs suspected of having canine influenza. Because the virus is highly contagious, some veterinarians are donning separate gowns for handling infected dogs. Spread most often when an infected dog coughs or sneezes, the virus can travel up to 20 feet in droplets, so people can carry the virus on their clothes, shoes, and hands. You can spread the disease from one dog to another, but dog flu is not transmissible to humans. It can take up to 10 days after exposure for a dog to show symptoms, and a dog can contract the illness even from a dog that may seem healthy. In Chicago, vets are advising dog owners to keep dogs home and especially avoid places like dog parks. Elsewhere, dog owners are advised to vaccinate their dogs if they plan to board them at a kennel, take them to a dog show, travel, or visit places where there are many dogs in close quarters. The dog flu vaccine is available in 2 doses, given 2 to 4 weeks apart. Owners are also advised to disinfect furniture and household surfaces after an ill dog recovers to avoid spreading canine influenza.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
This is Ed Barrena with the Sports Report. On April 5th, the San Diego Padres traded outfielders Carlos Quinton and Cameron Maybin away to the Atlanta Braves along with another outfielder and pitcher in exchange for the National League's leading closer Craig Kimbrell and outfielder Melvin Upton Jr., who is also the brother of another offseason trade from Atlanta, Justin Upton. Along with other additions such as Matt Kemp, who was picked up from the Dodgers, and James Shields, who came over from Kansas City, the Padres have high hopes to compete for a National League West title, if not to go deep into the playoffs. Of course, the games must be played. No matter how good the team looks on paper, unforeseen injuries and mishaps can derail a team that was projected to do well. Either way, Padres fans are more excited than they have been in years, due mostly to the acquisitions by general manager AJ Preller, who many credit with turning the franchise around. The home opener at Petco Park is Thursday, April 9th at 3:40 p.m. against the San Francisco Giants.
The East County Magazine show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
This is Ed Barrena with the Stadium Report. By a unanimous vote, San Diego supervisors have voted to split costs with the City of San Diego for hiring consultants for a new Charger Stadium proposed at the Qualcomm site in Mission Valley. The total cost could be up to $500,000 or $250,000 each for the city and county taxpayers to fund. The new stadium, if built, would also be a home for the San Diego State Aztecs, the Holiday and Poinsettia Bowl games, and other events. Though city and county leaders claim they are confident the Chargers will stay in San Diego, the Chargers are moving forward with plans to acquire land in Carson, a Los Angeles County community where a proposed new stadium would be shared with the Raiders. If approved, that plan could leave San Diego football fans footing the bill for stadium consultants without a team to cheer on. Some rural residents have criticized supervisors for spending lavish sums on stadium consultants while scrimping on funding for vital public services such as ambulances and keeping fire stations fully staffed.
At East County Magazine, our focus is normally on the inland region. But this week, there are just too many bizarre beach stories to resist. The first sounds like a whopper of a fish story. A man posing for a photo and holding a fish aboard a boat on Mission Bay on Sunday was pulled overboard by an apparently hungry sea lion. Or perhaps it just wanted a selfie. The 300-pound marine mammal bit the man several times and dragged him underwater, multiple news stations reported. The startled fisherman was treated for puncture wounds and lacerations to his leg. There is no word on the fate of the fish. Meanwhile, at Dog Beach in Del Mar, a new startup company is making waves. San Diego Sandcastles is teaching tourists how to build some amazingly detailed castles in the sand. Started by a laid-off teacher who is now making his living in a totally laid-back business, San Diego Sandcastles is already ranked number one on TripAdvisor's among San Diego's most popular attractions. Water temperature several degrees above normal drew crowds to the beach over Easter weekend. And at Mission Beach, lifeguards had to rescue over 24 swimmers due to strong rip currents, Channel 10 News reports. One teen admitted that this was her fifth time having to be rescued. So here's a suggestion. Unless you're angling for a hunky lifeguard to haul you out of the water, please stay out of the ocean when a rip current flags are up. And if you do get caught in a riptide, the suggestion is, please swim parallel to the shoreline to escape it, waving frantically. Here's some news that may have scuba fans diving for their wallets. CBS reports that the creators of Shark Shield visited San Diego to tout their new product, an electronic 3D shield that surrounds the diver and reportedly will repel a shark attack. You can learn more at sharkshield.com. which includes videos, test results, and a testimonial from a woman who says the device saved her from a great white shark. So if you've been avoiding scuba diving for fear of Jaws, it may finally be safe to go into the water. This is Richard Faust for East County Magazine.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society bringing you the sounds of history.
This is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting the Sounds of History on the East County Magazine show. April is Women's History Month. It's an appropriate time to share a story about a remarkable woman from East County's past. Helen Stoddard, a former resident of La Mesa, Lemon Grove, and Ramona, was a prominent leader in the fight to win women the right to vote, as well as in the temperance movement. She even earned a place in history at the national political level. Born in 1850 in Wisconsin, Stoddard earned a teaching degree at Genesee Wesleyan Seminary in New York, graduating as valedictorian in 1873. She married Shepherd Stoddard and had two sons, one of whom died in infancy. They lived briefly in Nebraska, but soon her husband's health was failing, so the family moved to Florida. And after he died in 1875, when Helen Stoddard was just 25 years old, she and her surviving young son moved to Texas to be near her parents. There, she became president of the Texas State Chapter of the Women's Christian Temperance Union, concerned over the negative impacts of alcoholism on women and their families. She also served on the faculty of Fort Worth University and helped establish a women's industrial arts college that today is known as Texas Women's University, where two buildings were named after her. She became an activist, lobbying successfully for a pure food law and laws against cocaine, gambling, child labor, raising the age of protection for girls from 12 to 15 in Texas, and more. She spent 3 months in Mexico as an organizer and twice served as a delegate to world conventions of the Women's Christian Temperance Union. She also wrote an article on the Texas suffrage movement for Susan B. Anthony's book, History of Woman Suffrage. In 1910, Helen Stoddard and her son moved to La Mesa, where she was soon elected president of the La Mesa Women's Club, which incidentally was founded in 1902 and is the city's oldest active service club today. She also headed up the local chapter of the Women's Christian Temperance Society, forerunner of the Prohibition movement. Local women embarked on barnstorming tours across the county to win support from men for women to gain the right to vote in California. La Mesa's newspaper and other local papers editorialized in favor of granting this right, since progressives in the region recognized that women would be key allies in local political issues and supporting social reforms related to child labor, public health, and regulating alcohol and vice. La Mesa Scout editorialized that the right of women to vote is as absolute as that of a man. In October 1911, California's legislature amended the state constitution, granting women the right to vote. Days later, Helen Stoddard loaded up motor cars with about 40 members of the La Mesa Women's Club and headed to the Registrar of Voters office in downtown San Diego, registering them all to vote. In La Mesa, then known as La Mesa Springs, a battle was brewing over incorporation to become a city. Supporters wanted the city to control its own water supply and support public education, among other goals. But there was strong opposition, mainly from ranchers who feared that their taxes would go up. Early efforts at incorporation faltered until the women got involved and won the right to vote. A meeting at the La Mesa Opera House on December 1, 1911, ended in disorder without a vote on whether to incorporate after vocal opponents showed up. Supporters brought their case to the supervisors, and among the speakers arguing to the supervisors was suffrage leader Helen Stoddard. The district attorney reviewed the petition, but rejected it at first for not meeting requirements to publish notices 3 times over 2 weeks. So the supporters circulated a new petition and adjusted boundaries to remove some of their key opponents. In February 1912, a new meeting was convened at the city's Opera House, a building that today is the Por Favor restaurant in downtown La Mesa. Citizens nominated candidates for public office in case the incorporation petition passed, and Helen Stoddard was nominated to serve, but she declined. Turned out she had higher ambitions, and we'll tell you about that in a minute. On February 7, 1912, a special election was held, and the incorporation measure passed, with help from La Mesa's newly registered women. Soon after, Stoddard declared her intention to run for Congress on the Prohibition Party ticket. She was the first woman in California to seek national office. Her campaign targeted women with the slogan, "A vote for Helen Stoddard is a vote for the home." She didn't win, but she did draw over 1,300 votes out of over 20,000 cast for five candidates in the race. A year later, she and her son Robert and his wife moved to Lemon Grove, where they spent the next 10 years, and in 1923, they moved to Ramona, where her son raised turkeys and chickens, while his mother continued her work in the temperance movement from their home overlooking the Ramona High School. In 1920, Helen Stoddard was elected president of the California State Chapter of the Women's Christian Temperance Union, and she served as a California delegate to the Congress Against Alcoholism in Washington, D.C. After her son's death in 1936 in Ramona, Stoddard and her daughter-in-law moved to Texas. Helen Stoddard died there in January 1941 at age 90, and her body was returned to San Diego for burial next to her son at Greenwood Memorial Park. She had lived through the Civil War, the Spanish-American War, World War I, and the dawn of World War II. Born in the pioneer era, in her lifetime she advanced education of women and saw women win the right to vote, helped lead the successful fight for La Mesa to become a city, ran for national political office, fought for the passage of the Prohibition Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, but also lived to see that repealed. Throughout her life, she was a tireless fighter for the rights of women and girls, touching the lives of people across our nation to this day.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
If you've traveled through Ramona recently, you may have noticed some colorful murals depicting the town's historical heritage. They're the products of Ramona Heart Murals, a nonprofit dedicated to encouraging economic vitality by increasing tourism, promoting community pride, and celebrating Ramona's rich cultural heritage through the innovative outdoor visual arts program. So far, artists have completed five murals. The Casey Tibbs mural commemorates a famous rodeo cowboy, actor, stuntman, and movie director who was twice named a world rodeo champion and once graced the cover of Life magazine. His image astride a bucking bronco adorns the Town and Country Real Estate Building created by artists John and Jeannie Whalen. An equine mural by Linda Churchill was sponsored by the San Vicente Saddle Club and depicts four aspects of equestrian traditions: rodeo, trail riding, cross country, and dressage. That's fitting in Ramona, where 17% of residents own at least one horse. A historic commerce mural sponsored by Ramona Chamber of Commerce members is actually a reproduction of a painting by Louise Schidner, which depicts her uncle driving his hay wagon down Main Street Ramona. The art team of Bob Teague, Mark Martinson, and David Billick created this mural. The Music Center mural by Jason Looper portrays a larger-than-life guitar celebrating the musical heritage of Ramona, a town that hosts an annual music festival. The latest mural, dedicated in April, is called Kenilworth Inn Time Travelers by artist Linda Luisi. It's on the side of the Ramona Food and Clothes Closet building at Main and 8th Streets. The former Kenilworth Inn on the site was built in 1887 as a rural tourist resort, but burned to the ground in 1943. Now it lives on in the mural depiction here. The acronym HEART reflects Ramona's location in the center of San Diego County. The letters reflect community characteristics: H for historic and hiking, E for equine, A for arts, antiques, and agriculture, R for scenic rural vistas and drives, and T for the tasting of fine wines. Can a wine tasting mural be far behind? Learn more at www.ramonamurals.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting for Leon Thompson, who's on vacation. This week's Destination East County includes the Morning Glory Brunch and Frog Race, a Camel Dairy Tour, and the world-famous Romero's Family Guitarist live in concert.
We'll also have a preview of coming attractions, including the Lakeside Rodeo and opening night of the Cajon Classic Cruises. So stay tuned for all of these events and more.
The 17th Annual Morning Glory Brunch will be held on April 11th at St. Madeline Sophie's Center in El Cajon. This event benefits the center's programs for adults with developmental disabilities. The brunch features a springtime ambiance in a beautiful organic garden, along with food and beverages from over 20 local restaurants, art, work from St. Madeline students and local artists, live music and entertainment, silent and Chinese auctions, and the ever-popular Great Frog Race. For brunch tickets or to reserve your Frog Race entry, you can visit stmsc.org, as in St. Madeline's Sophie's Center.
Julian, San Diego's historic gold community, hosts A Taste of Julian on April 11th from 1 to 5 p.m. This rural dining adventure features a self-guided culinary tour of restaurants, wineries, and breweries. Tickets are available at the Julian Town Hall at 2129 Main Street, along with your map of participating restaurants, wineries, and breweries. For details or tickets, visit julianca.com.
The Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona invites you to an open farm tour on April 11th and 12th from 1 to 4 p.m. An animal show featuring the Camel Dairy's entertaining residents will be staged at 1:30, after which you can enjoy camel rides, camel petting, and photos with the camels. For more information, visit cameldairy.com.
Saturday, April 11th is Sweet Pea Day at Summers Past Farms in Flint Springs, just east of El Cajon. This annual event celebrates fragrant, old-fashioned sweet pea flowers in full glory. Arrive early for this popular occasion. Gates open at 9 a.m. and cutting your own bouquets in a beautiful sweet pea maze starts at 11 a.m. while the blossoms last. You can also enjoy live music and snacks at a coffee bar or bring a picnic to enjoy on the grass. Find out more at summerspastfarms.com.
The City of La Mesa will host April Pools Day on April 11th from 12 to 3 p.m. at the La Mesa Community Pool to promote water safety. Activities include swimming lessons, water safety and CPR presentations, synchronized swimming and water polo demonstrations, and a mock rescue by city lifeguards and the fire department. April Pools Day is a free event for the whole family, so bring your swimsuits.
The Julian Family Fiddle Camp will be held at Camp Cedar Glen April 8th to the 12th. It's a music camp for folks of all ages and levels wanting to improve their skills on fiddle, mandolin, guitar, or old-time banjo. Some of the most renowned North American artists serve as faculty, with attendees coming from across the U.S. as well as abroad. Tents and RVs are allowed, with evening concerts for the public on Friday, April 10th, and Saturday, April 11th, at 7 p.m. For more information, visit familyfiddlecamp.com.
Flash Jam is an annual gathering of musicians who converge in front of Julian's Town Hall to play a trio of traditional old-time fiddle tunes on April 12th at 2 p.m. The event draws acoustic string musicians of all ages and abilities from far and near, with hundreds coming to fill the town with music. After the first round of tunes at the Town Hall, the musicians move to several other locations along Main Street to repeat their performance.
Three generations of the famous Romero's family will perform a guitar music concert on Sunday, April 12th at 2 p.m. at the Poway Center for the Performing Arts. The Romero's have performed for dignitaries around the world, including the President of the United States, His Royal Majesty of Spain, and Pope John Paul II at the Vatican. You can also opt to dine under the stars before the show with a gourmet meal catered by Café Merlot. For more information or tickets, visit powayarts.org. Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Yeehaw! The 51st Annual Lakeside Rodeo takes place on April 17th through 19th. The event features Western-style entertainment and events including bronc riding, barrel racing, steer wrestling, roping competitions, bull riding, and for youngsters, stick horse riding. As added attractions, world champion trick roper Ryder Keisner will be performing. In addition, the Budweiser Clydesdale horses will make an appearance at some rodeo performances. For tickets and information, you can visit lakesiderodeo.com.
The City of La Mesa invites you to Fun with Physics Day on Saturday, April 18th from 9 a.m. to noon at the La Mesa Boys and Girls Teen Club in Highwood Park. Experiments include bubbles, sink or float, dry ice experiments, barges, and more. For more information, visit lamesaparks.org.
Get ready to rev up. Cajon Classic Cruises is rolling out its 2015 season starting Wednesday, April 22nd with a full street closure for opening night. The cruises will continue all summer long on Wednesday nights from 5 to 8 p.m. The second week, April 29th, will celebrate Cinco de Mayo. Other highlights include Jimmy Johnson Night, a military tribute, and Thunder on Main Street. For the full Cajon Classic Cruises season lineup, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
Rock and roll superstar Chubby Checker will perform a concert with a twist on April 23rd at 8 p.m. in Sequoia's Live and Up Close Theater. Checker rocketed to fame in 1960 when his recording of The Twist was the number one song in the nation, sparking a new dance craze and variations such as the Peppermint Twist and Twist and Shout. He is the only artist ever to have five albums in the top 12 at one time and the only artist to have a song hit number one twice, The Twist. He won a Grammy for Best Rock Performance and went on to record more hit songs such as Limbo Rock, attracting a new generation of fans. For tickets, visit sequon.com.
Friends of East County Arts will host a garden tour on Saturday, April 25th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The tour features five gardens with an amazing variety of settings, including water-wise gardens, themed gardens, flowering plants, and a one-acre rose garden, plus vendors offering crafts and garden creations. Friends of East County Arts is a nonprofit philanthropic organization that supports the performing and fine arts in East County. For garden tour tickets, visit friendsofecarts.org. That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions here in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is Leon Thompson with a public service announcement for the City of Lemon Grove. The city is calling on all photographers, amateurs, professionals, adults, and youths to enter the city's first annual photo contest. Photographers are encouraged to showcase Lemon Grove's environment and architecture. However, all photos must contain an image of a lemon or lemon-related object, such as blossoms or trees, and be taken within the Lemon Grove city limits. The deadline to submit photos is April 30th. The application states, Lemon Grove is embedded with a rich history built around rose plentiful with citrus trees, and lemon growing became the town's largest industry. Celebrate the culture of Lemon Grove by entering your best image based around the iconic symbol of the lemon. Winners will be honored at a city council meeting, and all images submitted may be used in city marketing materials. Entries must be digital, and each photographer may submit up to three images. You can pick up entry forms at Lemon Grove City Hall or online at the city's website.
If you've ever thought you heard a woman screaming at night, it just might be something else. A female mountain lion's call, in fact, has often been described as sounding like a woman's scream. Here is a call that was caught by a trail cam. Such sounds are not unusual in rural East County. Recently, mountain lions have been heard in the Deerhorn Valley area, the Deerhound Valley Antler editor Kim Hamilton reports. Now, if you hear a mountain lion or you know they're in your community, be sure to keep your dogs and cats indoors, especially at night, and keep an eye on young children playing outdoors. Be sure livestock, such as chickens, are in a protected shelter, too, and if you see one, consider yourself lucky to see one of nature's amazing animals. Mountain lions and other natural predators serve a positive role in the ecosystem, helping to keep other wildlife populations under control, and they are protected under California law. Kim Hamilton calls the recent recovery of lions, bobcats, and coyotes in her community a very healthy sign for Deerhorn Valley's recovery from the 2007 wildfire devastation. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Springtime is here, and a lot of Californians are considering home improvements. And that has consumer watchdog groups warning homeowners to beware of con artists offering steep discounts. Former FBI agent Bob Denz says the scams rake in billions of dollars each year nationwide from unsuspecting consumers.
They often work in pairs, and also the other thing the con artist needs is to rush you into this. A lowball figure, but you have to tell me now.
He also says the scammers usually say they happen to be in the neighborhood and have a crew available right now. The Better Business Bureau ranks this scam among the top 10 that are currently preying on consumers in California and the nation. Denz is now a fraud fighter with AARP and says seniors are at extra risk for this scam because many can no longer do the repairs themselves. He says it only takes a couple of steps to increase the odds of getting a reliable contractor.
Make sure they have a license and make sure that they get a recommendation from a neighbor or a friend, someone you know who did some repair work. And take your time. Take your time.
A contractor's license can easily be checked by going to the California Contractor State License Board. You can also sign up for watchdog alerts on the AARP website. For Public News Service, I'm Lori Abbott.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
This is Ed Barena with Brewbeat, covering San Diego's craft beer industry in East County. The Brewers Association is a nonprofit trade group based in Boulder, Colorado, which represents small and independent craft brewers. On March 31st, they released their annual list of the top 50 craft brewing companies for 2014. Four San Diego brewers made the list, including one in the top 10. The list was compiled from data on beer sales volume. The top San Diego craft brewer was Stone Brewing Company, which is based in Escondido. They were ranked number 9 on the list, and they have always pushed the limits on their beers, from the bold flavors to the company logo itself, which features a fierce-looking gargoyle holding a stein. That strategy seems to have paid off, as they are set to open breweries in Virginia and even in Berlin, the UT San Diego reports. Next on the list, ranking at number 31, is Ballast Point Brewing and Spirits. Famous for their line of beers featuring marine-themed names such as Sculpin, Longfin, and Sea Monster, Ballast Point takes pride in the seafaring tradition of San Diego. Coming in at number 45 is a San Diego staple, Carl Strauss. Their Red Trolley Ale is a well-known craft beer, and their restaurants can be found throughout the region and beyond. They offer a fine variety of many traditional and experimental brews. Finally, making their debut in the top 50 is Green Flash Brewing Company at number 48. Their famous West Coast India Pale Ale has no doubt influenced brewers all over, with its bitter and hoppy finish. A true West Coast brewing operation, Green Flash is based in San Diego and creates a wide variety of beers with creative names such as Le Freak and Palette Wrecker. With so many acclaimed brews in San Diego, it's no wonder that our region is becoming world famous as a beer capital. The full list of craft brewers can be found at www.brewersassociation.org. Remember, though, you must be 21 or older to drink beer, and please drink responsibly.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.